because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized summary of a very busy week in the Capitol and a very busy week in Wisconsin politics. J.R., we're going to laundry list some of the bills that made it to the Gov's desk and some of those that didn't. But I want to start out with this Tuesday primary election.
Yes.
And I find
surprise.
It,
Tuesday right. surprise, yeah.
Yeah. And you use the word surprise. And are we both coming from at it from the same way? You had three incumbents that didn't get 50%.
But it's a different surprise at each level. The shock of the night, by far, no holds barred, was Chris Larson topping, not even just keeping Abelin under 50%, but topping Chris Abelin in that primary. You have to look at that dynamic of that race. Chris Abelin had spent, by some estimates, $2 million on positive TV, kind of these soft, fuzzy bio ads. Chris Larson's campaign has been a mess. Staffers leaving, not raising much money.
Two top staffers left.
So how did he come close? Well, it suggests a couple things. One, Abe Lee does not have a network of support in Milwaukee County beyond the people who will turn out. You know, so yeah, this guy's okay. Chris Larson has a network, though, of people who will walk through fire to support him because they either A, like Larson, or B, can't stand Abe Lee. It shows you that the power of networking and grassroots and knocking on doors and that motivated base, especially a low turnout election, that can make a big difference in a race like that.
Okay, but let's go back and look at the numbers. First of all, let's start with the Supreme Court. The incumbent justice, even though she's only been on the bench a few months, appointed by Walker, 45%. Court of Appeals Judge Joanne Kloppenburg, 43%. Then, as you just alluded to, I agree, the stunner of the night, State Senator Chris Larson, Democrat, 45%, edging Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele, 44%. And then finally, Mayor Tom Barrett, he comes in at 46% over Alderman Bob Donovan, who won the primary. So there'll be those are the three runoffs. Now, back it up. Let's back up the train. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. Justice Bradley was helped by independent third-party efforts.
About $1 million from Wisconsin Alliance for Reform, radio and TV.
Yes, and there was some veteran Capitol hands, and you probably talked to them, that said she should have gotten 55 or 60%.
They were hoping, on the conservative side of the aisle, they were hoping that she'd do so well, it would send a message to races over four, even got off the ground, that, like, hey, this is a done deal. She's in such a powerful position. Liberal groups don't bother spending money. It's not going to be worth it. She's in a very powerful position, and Kloppenburg or Donald can't catch up. That narrative was swept away on Tuesday. It not only gives liberal groups a reason to get involved, it gives liberal voters hope that, hey, we could win this one. Let's be honest. I mean, the Ann Walsh-Bradley race from a couple of years ago never really materialized. Justice Abramson a couple of years, now or 7 years ago.
Rogan's Zach versus Fallone, that didn't go anywhere.
But conservatives have a string. When conservative groups get involved in races, conservative justices or candidates win. Lewis Butler lost, Annette Ziegler won this. I mean, you go on down the line. This may be a different dynamic all of a sudden. We're going, okay, there's a chance for liberals to win one, which they need. They don't just need this one. They need this one plus one more to flip majority in the Supreme Court to a 4-3 liberal majority.
What percent of her 40, to what extent did her 43% get helped by the fact that she ran in 2011 against Prosser? You had a recount that took 7 weeks to resolve. So did she have the name ID that the progressives and the left rallied around?
You know, that likely had a big part to do with her being, I mean, if you look at the $1 million spent to help Bradley, and it was all positive bio ads. They weren't like, vote for Bradley, but they were, she's a great person kind of ads. I think Kloppenburg did about $205,000 of TV, and her ad was pretty much, Rebecca Bradley's a crony of Scott Walker, Joe Donald backed her twice, I'm the true alternative, if you will. And Donald was more of a, I'm above the fray, about $150,000. So, you know, Kloppenburg must have had some residual effect. I mean, drive around Madison. There are still green bumper stickers from 2011 that Kloppenburg for Justice, you know? So there's still got to be some residual from that that people latched on to, because it wasn't like there was a huge groundswell of money behind her to offset what's going on the other side of the aisle.
But can't you and I almost hear the lock and load mentality on the part of the independent groups who want to elect Justice Bradley right now?
Oh, yeah.
The day after the election, Charlie Syke played that soundbite that he said, you're going to hear a lot of this, in which Kloppenburg said, being tough on crime is not my message.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, look for heavy third-party spending on the part of Bradley now, between now and April 5th?
Absolutely. The conservative coalition, as we call it, will fire up the jets. And now, what vehicle will they use? Is it Wisconsin Alliance for Reform will be the main vehicle for those ads. It used to be WMC, but that group had a little bit of a bad experience, if you will, in a couple of races and pulled back. So what outlet, Club for Growth, you know, are there all these outlets they can use? But again, now there's like a hope for liberals of, okay, we might be able to raise money this time and kind of counter that a little bit.
Yeah, which is my next question. Since she did come so close to Bradley and Bradley got under 50%, are we going to see Greater Wisconsin or some other group launch some heavy third-party spending on behalf of Kloppenburg?
They're not going to telegraph it, but I bet they're raising money right now, or at least trying to be prepared to do that. Absolutely.
Because they're saying this is winnable.
Yes.
The election results.
Absolutely. Well, look at the results, one. Two, what's the dynamic out there? What's it going to be like in April? And what's the message of this race from Tuesday? Is Bradley tied to Walker? And because Walker's numbers are bad, she has an issue? Now, we've talked before on the show that I remain convinced that if there one side has a presidential primary going on, the other one doesn't, that will dictate what happens in the Supreme Court race. But as we sit here right now, it looks like both parties will have an active primary come April, at least some semblance of one. It could be, you know, that could wipe out that advantage one side or the other and make it a true, you know, high turnout race for April for Wisconsin.
Do you see any fallout from the huge national debate over the Scalia vacancy on the Supreme Court? In other words, we're focused on the Supreme Court nationally. Are we equally, is some of that carrying over in Wisconsin?
You know, I had somebody suggest me this week that maybe that helped boost turnout on Tuesday. Because I looked. Now, Milwaukee and Madison, they had higher than turnout than 3 years ago. Last ran a three-way primary for
Supreme Court. Yeah, I saw your analysis. I thought it was good.
So Milwaukee almost doubled. Hey, they've got a contested mayoral race, four-way primary county executive. That makes sense. Dane County is Kloppenburg's base. That makes sense. But Brown County, twice as many voters almost as 2013.
2X? Twice as many?
Went from 10,000 and change to 20,000 and change.
Okay.
And the problem for Bradley was she did much worse in Brown County than what Rogensack did 3 years ago. Now, if you were starting to look at the map of Wisconsin anymore, if you're a conservative or a Republican, you want to run the score up in Brown County and that Fox Valley area. That will offset the advantage that Dems have in driving turnout in Milwaukee and Madison. Go back to 2012. When I saw an election night that Tommy Thompson under 50% and Mitt Romney in Brown County, I knew it was over for both of them that election in Wisconsin because you can't win as a conservative at that mark. She had problems there. Go to Eau Claire and La Crosse counties 3 years ago. Those are counties that in Dem elections, in presidential elections, vote Dem. Mm-hmm. But Republicans can do well or even win them. Scott Walker won there in 2010, for example. Not only did Kloppenburg win, whereas Rogensack did 3 years ago, she won by big margins there. What's that mean? What's the sentiment out there? What's brewing out the electorate right now?
Well, I want to stay on this because it's so fascinating, but I want to ask the voter turnout question. You know, GAB predicted 10%. It came in at 13% Tuesday. Then let me check my notes. In the 2012 presidential primary, according to GAB records I checked today, 26% turnout. 2008, 35% turnout in the presidential primary. If we have another heavy turnout in the presidential primary, who does it help, who does it hurt in Bradley versus Kloppenburg?
Well, it depends. Does Wisconsin feel the burn? I mean, that's kind of a big question. If Bernie Sanders is alive and well come, you know, April, he's going to bring out voters who don't normally turn out in the spring election in Wisconsin. They are a passionate base for him. They are not going to be Justice Bradley voters. They're going to be Judge Kloppenburg voters. That would help her a great deal. On the other side, conservatives, who's a Trump voter, who is he or she for in a Supreme Court race? He's got a different dynamic of voter, if you will. If you're a Ted Cruz voter, who are you for? You would think they'd be more like Bradley, I'm sorry, but that Trump vote, I have no idea who those folks are or where they would gravitate toward because they're also anti-incumbent, anti-establishment. So because Bradley is the establishment candidate, is that bad for... Who knows?
When he won New Hampshire, Sanders said, I'm going to take this opportunity to ask people to send in $27, mm-hmm. right? And he got enough money to play in states beyond the SEC primary and Nevada and South Carolina. So we're going to have a real election. Okay, but let's circle back quickly. What does Chris Abele have to do now, between now and April 5?
It's more a question of what tact he takes. Does he keep running positive bio ads that talk about great guys, or does he take the sheen off of Chris Larson? That's the question. Make it a referendum not on him, but a choice election between Chris Abele, the incumbent, and Chris Larson, the guy who they will say did A, B, and C that you may not like. That's kind of the choice they have to make as a campaign.
Abele doesn't pick up any support from the conservatives, does he, against Chris Larson?
If you're going to come out and vote in the Republican primary for president in April in Milwaukee County, who are you going to support? You know, who? I mean, you're not going to vote for Larson, most likely, right? Larson is a liberal. He's proud liberal, progressive. So where do you go if you're that voter? What do you say? Do you feel passionate and say, well, I want Abley because he's fiscally moderate? Or do you say, I'm just not going to vote in the county executive's race?
But if I go in on April 5 and I cast a Republican presidential primary ballot, I can't then cast a Democratic ballot in that primary because I'm already a Republican.
Yeah, but it's not a county executive race is not a partisan race.
You're right. Thanks for the correction. Okay, finally, Mayor Barrett is at 46, mm-hmm. Alderman Donovan, 33. Less trouble for Tom Barrett?
Talking to people this week, I have the impression he is still in the strongest position of the three incumbents who got under 50% because of a couple of things. One, he got 46, Donovan was 33, a bigger gap, if you will. Two, Alderman Davis came in third. He did endorse Donovan this week.
Donovan,
but Davis,
his percentage was what?
19%.
Yeah.
Davis, African-American alderman, said that he believed Donovan was better on issues for the African-American community. But Donovan is a conservative, you know. Is he really going to attract the Davis base, if you will, and have a coalition of that against Barrett? That's kind of tough to see in some ways. Barrett has $800,000 in change. He will run scared. He will raise money like, you know, he's in a real race. He will drop ads. If Donovan gets momentum, they can pull out stuff from his past and hit him with that. So there's a sense of he's in better shape, but Barrett kind of had two easy elections back-to-back, hit 70%. That's not going to happen this time, most likely. So, you know, it's a sign of the weakness that he had. In some ways, if they had gotten something more, if Davis had gotten through, he could have built a broader coalition than maybe Donovan could have and given Barrett a more of a run for his money come April.
Okay. Meanwhile, in the Capitol, the Assembly met twice. They considered, you know, about 220 different items.
Yeah, roughly.
And the Senate met once. Mm-hmm. We can finally list some things that are on the governor's desk. First time OWI offenders must appear in court. I looked it up, JR. This is going to come as a surprise to the, let me find the number. In 2014, 17,675 people got convicted of OWI the first time. They're not aware of this change.
Yeah.
This is a big symbolic thing for them. They can no longer have their attorney go plead them out, forfeiture. Yep. They have to show up in court.
It's still, though, not a crime. It's still a
I agree, but it personally registers when you have to stand before a judge.
It's a big hurdle that I don't know that we'll ever get past as a state to make that first offense a crime. We're an anomaly, if you will, but I think we're going to hold on that one for a long time.
And then fourth offense, OWI, that darling Jim Ott bill passed. Even though the fiscal note, as we discussed, it could be more than $100 million.
Moss argued this week that's over an excessive because it's a deterrent to fourth offense, that it won't. Now, I don't know if I definitely believe that. You see guys getting fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth offenses in Wisconsin on regular bases.
Yeah. That's frightening.
So I don't know if that's necessarily true, but yes, they're also counting that fiscal impact being in out years, that there won't be a big surge until we get through this next budget, maybe.
Yep, that's right. And online voter registration is on the governor's desk. It ends the special registration deputies. That we talked about that last week. That's no big surprise. The governor's going to sign that.
Oh, absolutely. Reins in again. New limits on, for example, new deadline for when your absentee ballot has to rely on the clerk's office, does away with the special registration deputies. But the argument is, look, anybody with a smartphone or an iPad now can walk around the neighborhood and the same thing you do as a special registration deputy without the certification from the clerk. You don't need it anymore. So it's technology. It's changing. You know, it's a different world than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Milwaukee County wanted to issue its own ID cards. The bill that's on the governor's desk said this cannot be used to vote or apply for state benefits.
Mm-hmm. Reins it in. A little bit different bill than when they first proposed it.
Yep.
They realized they had some issues with what they wanted originally. Still allows, for example, if you want to issue an ID card for the library or the pool or something like that, you know, you can still do it. But that is part of the kind of protest we saw this week in the Capitol with Hispanics saying there's something going on here we don't like. You guys are targeting us. You know, we need these documents. And there's this kind of this disconnect between what they believe that will do in their lives and what the backers of that bill believes it will not do to their lives.
Right. And the Mark Harris bill, for want of a better term, is on that says county executives cannot serve in the legislature. But it's interesting. The Senate added a 60-day grace period.
Which only takes you to January.
I understand.
Harris this morning, I will not be deterred by this bill.
Yes.
And interesting, now Chris Larson has to worry about this bill a little bit. And oh, by the way, he voted for it on the floor of the Senate.
I didn't. Oh, that's a great catch. This strip search bill. 2 years ago, they said, if you're only being held for 12 hours in a jail, you can't be strip searched. Well, the sheriffs, I went to that public hearing, they said that those people are smuggling in weapons, contraband, drugs, things like that. So on the governor's desk is a bill that says even if you're only being held for 12 hours, you can be strip searched. But let's look at some other things that passed. The navigable water bill, that passed, mm-hmm. although it was amended.
As we talked about last week, I wasn't sure that the assembly version could get done before they broke. And true to that guess, a good guess, I guess, on my part, they basically took out the most controversial provisions from that bill. The 30 cubic yards, you could dredge. The original bill, you could dredge 30 cubic yards from a lake abutting your property. That is gone. The dry lake beds deeds, which basically is an old lake bed, but it's dried up and has been for a certain number of years.
Is that the general permit provision?
That's
gone.
Piece was pulled out.
Okay.
There's this really complicated piece about areas of special designation, if you will. Republicans have been unhappy because the DNR, has, for example, said that all the chain of lakes in Dane County, I believe, are all part of this special designation. It's a sensitive area, if you will. All of Lake Winnebago is a designation. The bill changed that originally the assembly version said JCRAR, I believe, had the power to weigh in on this or had review of it. These designations. The DNR retains that power under the amended bill, but it says you can't have an entire body of water be it. You have to have, for example, the spawning area or the migration area. That's the designation, not the entire thing.
And Senator Tom Tiffany put out a press release this morning, his managed forest land bill, mm-hmm. which is very interesting because it says under the current law, you could protect and keep the public off 160 acres of your managed forest land. This doubles that to 320.
And what backers are saying is, like, look, people on the current program are gaming the system by taking their 320 acres or 500 and splitting it to two and three parcels.
Yeah.
So they keep, you know, so they keep under the cap as it is, and this is a better way to do this.
Okay, and now we can list a few bills that will not make it that died. First of all, the bill that would make it easier for municipalities to sell water utilities to private businesses. On the Senate calendar, what killed it?
I think people kind of went, I'm not sure about this. It's not
especially
time.
Especially with the background of Flint. Excuse me.
You know, I asked Fitzgerald about that, the Senate Majority Leader, Tuesday night. And he's like, you know, maybe some Dems that have used it on the floor, but there's more of a concern in my caucus about other things. So this bill passed the Assembly via voice vote. Then all of a sudden, Flint came up, and all these kind of environmental groups kind of like started raising red flags, saying there's a problem here. So that may have been part of it as well.
And the ban on the research of fetal tissue, no surprise there. There just hasn't been. This was so hot, and it looked like it had momentum. And then over the last 2 months, the support just fell away.
Oh, even going back to late summer of last year, early fall, Robin Voss appointed several members of this caucus to try and work out a compromise to address the research piece of it. It never got past the discussion stage. I mean, I think there are people who were trying to figure out, can we pull this to the floor? Can we force a vote? And Republican leadership kept saying to people, look, if you force a vote on this bill, what will happen is you won't get 50 votes from Republicans. You will get Republicans who vote for a Dem substitute amendment. That means we lose control of the bill. It's not what we want. So let's not do that. But a lot of internal politics with that one.
And I think I was wrong. I thought Representative Dean Knudsen's bill, local option county sales tax, half cent for local streets and roads, I thought that would go through the Assembly. It was on the calendar. They debated saying no more counties if this passes could levy wheel taxes, and then it just fell away, oblivion, gone.
The conservative media coalition started, you know, firing up the jets, if you will, and tweeting at members in the caucus and saying, this is a problem. What are you guys doing? You're raising taxes. And sure enough, it went away.
I was wrong again. This bill, this late starter, create the legislative bill with oversight over closed John Doe records, that just went nowhere.
No.
This huge trial balloon, but I bet it comes back.
I don't doubt that at all. A lot of these things are going to come back. Another one that passed. The interest in the Senate on Tuesday night, three bills were sent to committee. Not just the water bill, but the one about wrongful convictions that would increase the cap for how much you can get paid if you're wrongfully convicted.
Yes.
That was on the calendar, sent to joint finance. Now, it had already been dipped in finance on the day before, I believe it was.
I lost track of that one. Dead?
So, well, it was
Who
knocked
knows?
Off the calendar,
okay.
And apparently it's concerned about the fiscal impact of the bill. Now, you know, how many claims we get in a year, it's kind of hard to say that it's going to be millions every year, but it also kind of comes in the backdrop of the Stephen Avery case coming back up again. I don't know if people are, like, really comfortable with that idea of tackling this right now. I mean, who knows?
But there are all kinds of issues. You heard Coyne at the Voss press conference. It's got nothing to do with Stephen Avery.
Doesn't matter.
We haven't done this in decades.
Optics are bad sometimes. Let's see, other things that won't pass.
Restructuring Weedick. Go ahead.
Also, they sent to committee a bill on Tuesday that would restrict the ability of property owners to rent their homes for 7 or more days. Now, they could possibly bring that. Yes, they could possibly bring it back. They still got time to work it out. But on the calendar and then sent to committee, that raises a question about that one. I mean, it's one more up in the air bill, if you will, like sanctuary cities. That one.
It's in the Senate.
Passed the assembly, talked to a spokeswoman for Fitzgerald yesterday, said, well, our version of the bill is a little bit different. We're not sure. We haven't caucused on it yet. Steve Nass, co-author of that bill, chair of that committee, I want this bill to come up. That's another one where Fitzgerald's going to have to kind of take his caucus and take a temperature and see where they sift and winnow and where they end up. If he gets a 17, it'll come to the floor. If not, it might just not go anywhere.
One other thing that emerged late would have declared DraftKings and FanDuel bets games of chance.
Mm-hmm.
That never got. I bet we see that one again.
What happens to college affordability and dementia? Those packages both passed the assembly yesterday. The Senate, from what I can understand, has concerns about spending, aren't sure about some of the provisions that are needed. So might they take a couple pieces of that and pass it and say we're done for now, or push off the implementation date? That would kill the bill because someone's got to come. I mean, there's a big juggling act going on right now with some of those bills.
In fact, I think on Rewind next week, let's make a list of the major decisions that the Senate's going to have to do in terms to have to make in terms of accepting some of those assembly bills. Huge rally yesterday, 20,000 people. It was just so engaged. I just found it so intriguing. Latinos came to the Capitol, and they said, we don't like these two bills, and let's take a listen to some clips from that rally.
Today we celebrate a statewide general strike of thousands of Latino and immigrant workers from all industries. We demand that AB 450 and SB 533 not be signed into state law, which would be a stain of disgrace on our state. Nosotros hemos tenido aquí nuestro restaurante por 10 años, y nosotros les podemos decir que los latinos hacemos la diferencia aquí. Nosotros no pudiéramos tener un restaurante si no tuviéramos latinos que trabajaran para nosotros. Los latinos consumen, los latinos somos gente trabajadora, y los latinos se quedan. Somos seres humanos, y ¿qué decimos de la AB 450? ¡No!
Okay, that was a pretty active, pretty healthy rally. They don't like the sanctuary city bill. Now, let's go back to the status of that. That is in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked to senators. They have a question.
Yes. Well, Fitzgerald's office said they have to caucus on it. You know, that there's still some questions about where they're at with that. The bill was amended. The original version of that bill said if you were detained, lawfully detained, you could be asked about your immigration status.
Right.
It was changed to charge the crime. The assembly then on Tuesday added specific statutes of what crimes would be covered, that you'd be charged with those crimes to be asked your immigration status. The Senate version is a little bit different. Now, there's some machinations, if you will, they have to go through to get this bill on the floor, but will they take it up? That's still kind of up in the air. You know, Tank was not very definitive, but again, they got a caucus on it, you know, and that's a 19-member caucus that is sometimes difficult to manage or say, you shall do this. They have to reach their own conclusion sometimes before you can move forward.
And the sponsor of Sanctuary City, Representative Spiros out of central Wisconsin, and Speaker Voss said, look, even if you're here illegally, this bill doesn't affect you unless you commit a crime. And he blamed Democratic activists for staging that huge rally.
Mm-hmm.
That's his term, not mine.
Yes.
But wasn't there a sense that, hey, we can produce 20,000 people to get some momentum in an election year?
You know, good question about that. I mean, Republicans have struggled with Hispanic voters in general. Now, if you're here illegally, you're not voting, or you're not supposed to be voting at least. So I don't know that there'll be a driving factor in the polls next year. But if you're trying to win the Hispanic population that is here illegally, and it's a healthy one, that's going to be hard to do. Some Hispanic activists, even that I saw one conservative blogger, it's like, this bill is a problem for me. You know, what's going on with this? So there's some work to be done. Not saying it won't get done. Not saying it won't pass. But there's at least a discussion we had in the Senate about, where's this bill going to go?
Okay, let's get into the Act 10 archives. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the State Journal front page from 5 years and one day ago, State of Chaos. Okay, now let's look at the front page of the State Journal today. Thousands at Capitol rally. So, you know, there's a sense of vibrancy, and there's a tremendous amount of energy at these rallies, even though the ones with Act 10 were much different. Whole different world. So let's go back in the archives, dip back in the Act 10 archives, and listen. Set it up. Walker had introduced Act 10. The Democrats had just left. This is what the Capitol sounded like 5 years ago.
The Senate is now under a call of the House, and we will try to find the members who decided not to show up for work today. Thank you.
This is an incredible sight today. We've got so much going on, but we want to kick this off to show how much we love this country.
It's outrageous, and the 5.5 million people that aren't being represented because we're not on the floor debating this bill yesterday and today, those are the people that are really losing out. They shut down government is what they've done.
Right now we have 25, 26, 27 in a class, and if this passes, I'm very concerned with how big the class sizes would be.
Good afternoon! My name is Phil Neuenfeld. I'm the president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, and I bring you greetings of solidarity.
Pass the bill! Pass the bill! Pass the bill!
Support Governor Walker for doing the right thing. So we need to continue to show him his support for him, not only today, but in the upcoming days, that he will know that we are behind him, that he can do the right thing, and know that we will be with him shoulder to shoulder, step for step.
JR, what struck me about that video is the Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, we cannot do our business because the Democrats have left. I don't know what to do here. They really surprised him. He didn't know the next steps, right?
I've never seen anything like that in the Capitol. I don't know if I'll never see it again. But that was so unusual. Whoever found that provision or knew it was a fairly bright person. To realize they could stop that fiscal bill, and that was a way to do this. But it allowed that protest movement it gave it oxygen like a fire. It gave the fire oxygen so it could grow and become a wildfire and engulf the Capitol for weeks.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep taking quick dives into the Act 10 archives because we got such strong video on it. Okay. Was politics stock report rising?
So, Chris Larson, we covered a little bit of it before, but again, the network, the Working Families Party in Milwaukee that's kind of active in the progressive politics, the unions, this is one thing I don't been covered a whole lot, but, you know, Chris Abele hasn't just, like, irritated public employee unions. He's antagonized them in Milwaukee County. They feel like, look, with Walker, when he was county executive, we knew what he was going to do. We knew that he was not a friend. We felt like we supported you to succeed him, and then you went and did this to us. So there's a real burn, if you will, with those guys. They're coming out to vote against Abele. Now, the question becomes, what happens between now and April? Do they take the sheen off of Chris Larson? By the way, Dan Adams ran for the Assembly in 2014, created a 501c4, I think it is, or C3, one of the two, working Milwaukee or something like that. He could be a vehicle, or his group could be a vehicle to go after Larson, so it's not Abele dirtying up his hands. The dynamic of the April race, what's it going to look like with turnout, the presidential election, what's going to happen? I mean, there's a shot. Now, if you're Abele, do you decide, okay, I'm a moderate in my mind who's socially liberal, I'm trying to appeal to left-of-center voters, do I say, the heck with that, I'm going moderate and conservative, I'm going to appeal to those guys voting in the Republican primary and go for broke with that? Those are big questions to ask yourself and answer between now and then.
Okay, I completely agree. Rising Chris Larson, mixed.
Rebecca Bradley, kind of get a little bit more of the dynamic we talked about. Was one thing I'm wondering from this election, and this is not just about Bradley, but most of what I tell you on the show is based off the conventionalism I gather from talking to people all week long, right? I don't know if conventionalism has ever been so like up in the air as I've seen it right now about what is the environment like in Wisconsin? What is happening out there? Is it an anti-incumbent mood? Is it an anti-Walker thing? Like, what is going on? It's almost unsettling to try and talk about, well, this is what's happening, because I don't think we really know. I don't think we'll know until November. Why is Donald Trump still doing well in the polls when he's fighting everybody, like the Pope yesterday?
I mean,
what is going on in this country that this is happening? I don't think that we have an answer right now. Okay. And so there's a real issue for like Bradley, who was seen as the incumbent. Even though it's only 4 or 5 months, she's still the incumbent. She's tied to Walker. Now, is that fair or not? It's just the way it is. What is going on out there? And is there this other dynamic that I'm trying to pick up is a pendulum swinging back in Wisconsin? We've been watching conservatives pretty much have their way with state capital for the last 5 years. They've enacted almost every major piece of their agenda.
More than 40 2011 items. I have a list.
Now.
It's an amazing list.
All right. The state of Wisconsin is not a deep red state. It is a moderate state in off years and a bluish state in presidential years. I've always wondered that, you know, Republicans party on the Assembly have seats they shouldn't have, that their Democratic seats top of the ticket. But they've done a good job with the property tax message, things like that, taking advantage of the environment in 14 and 10. Is this a sign that pendulum's starting to swing back a little bit? They're going, you know what? You've finally gone too far. My schools aren't getting the money that they need. I'm not happy with this. You know, you ask Republicans at Capitol, and they're like, I hope not. You know, it's hard to say. But it could be the sign of, and it might not just be a partisan thing, too. It might be that everybody throw all the bums out. It could be a wild November in Wisconsin.
And you've got Scott Walker falling.
Yes.
But yesterday he went to Waukesha, signed bills that will deny Planned Parenthood $7.5 million. Mm-hmm. So he was able to play to the base, and the photo op, got the photo op, and he's falling?
His FBI is investigating his Department of Corrections. Lincoln Hills, his secretary leaves. The day the FBI announces, yeah, we're in charge, there's a burgeoning controversy there in this department. That is not a good optic. And oh, by the way, this whole thing was blossoming while he was running for president. Now, it may not match up perfectly day for day when things are going on, but when that's happening and a Racine County judge sends your office a letter saying, there are problems here, you've got to do something about this, and the answer is, well, we passed it on to corrections. It sends a message of not minding the store, if you will. And it, whether it's fair or not, it matches up and you go, well, what's going on? You know, there's an issue there. And oh, by the way, his handpicked successor for state Supreme Court gets 45%, it's about $1 million behind her. Is he, and he was prominent in the ads of the opponents, is he dragging her down? His college affordability package is his number one priority this spring. He said, I asked him a couple weeks ago, we were there, what's the best jobs bill they could do between now and the
college
end of the
session? College affordability.
And it's passed the Assembly Senate's going, we're not sure. You know, there's still a little bit of a vacuum, if you will, in the Capitol of he's back in the state. You look at his calendar, he's out traveling constantly to re-engage with voters.
Hawaii Lincoln Day?
Why is he re-engaging with the Capitol? Is he back in charge? I don't know. You know, there's still some, but the correction, the biggest thing is the corrections department. That is a mess right now, and it could get dangerous for him and his administration unless he can handle this and try. I mean, every story is bad coming out of the department lately, you know?
Okay.
It's not great.
Okay, we're out of time. Hey, next week we're going to pull up a third chair, State Democratic Chair Martha Lanning. We're going to talk to her about this election year. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.